Everybody, welcome back to Homers at the Bat podcast. My name is Jeff Crisco. I'm here with Joe Gruen after a long, long absence. Joe, how are you doing today?
I'm doing good, and I didn't feel like it was that long ago. I feel because we were talking about Cueto, we were talking about Samardzija, so it must have only been, I want to say, 7 months.
Yeah, about 7 months, which is, I mean, it's a long enough time in podcasting. But what happened was I got married. Joe, you were there.
I was a party. Yeah,
you were there. You were looking all dapper. And then I went to the Bahamas. You weren't there. And then I moved. Yeah. And now here I am. I'm actually in my office, which I didn't have before. It's an office/guest room. So it's
congratulations. Wow.
Very, very fancy with my bed with no sheets on it yet because we're not done moving in. So.
Do you have a couch though and a TV? Because that's all I usually use.
Well, yeah, we have we're moved into the point where like we could live, but there's no decorations on the wall. And if you were like, "Hey, Jeff, do you have an extra like iPod cable?" I'd be like, "Oh my god, let me dig through like 12 boxes trying to find it." But right. Like, we're at that level of moved in where it's like, "Oh, this is habitable," and. We can function, but it's definitely not done.
Well, congratulations, man. That's a big thing.
Yeah, I'm excited. If we have a guest room, you guys can come down. You can stay the night. There's a place for you to stay. So,
now, is this a house or is this an apartment?
It's an apartment. It's actually in the same complex because there's no way in the world that we can actually have a house in the Bay Area because it's like, I think that the median home price is like $860,000 now.
Wow.
So it's insane. Our rent for the 2-bedroom, I won't say how much it is, but it's almost twice my sister's mortgage in Manteca for a 4-bedroom house.
Holy crap.
Yeah. So that's where we are now. It's pretty crazy. But yeah, so
well, you're not out on the streets yet.
You know? Not yet. I'm working on it though. Now that I got Kate's money, like we have a joint bank account now I can really spend us completely out of house and home. Like just blow all of it. It can't be like where Kate can't go, "Well, you know, at least we still have my money." I'd be like, "Nope, I spent that too."
And it's gone.
Exactly. So yeah, I think, Joe, I think, we've decided we're going to be doing this thing weekly going forward. Probably going to record them on Thursdays, probably go up Thursday night or Friday. And so hopefully we can get back in the groove, talking about sports, getting stuff going again. But one thing that I realized we never did any real housekeeping, beforehand. So, I'm a, Inscriber magazine. I think that might be new from the last time too. The last website was a website that went nowhere because that guy was
right.
And you know what we never did, Joe, is we never gave out our Twitter handles. Like every podcast, like you can follow us on Twitter. So you can follow me at JM Crisco. You can follow Joe at Katy Perry, KatyPerry. You can be Joe. I think Joe is up to like 45 million followers or something.
Yeah, it's huge.
So congratulations.
Talking is mostly sports, which you guys will find.
Oh my god!
But just keep following anyway, because
the sports are coming.
They're coming eventually.
They're coming eventually. Oh my! I was wrong. She has almost 91 million followers. That's way too many.
That's ridiculous.
Yeah. So all right. So the big thing we want to talk about is the main thing that we talked about most of the time. It is the Giants, San Francisco Giants. Yeah, wow. So if we had done this podcast about 2 weeks ago, we would have talked about how great the Giants are, about how they have the best record in baseball, and about how they're cruising through the regular season or shoo-in for the playoffs. But then they went and stopped winning baseball games immediately after the All-Star break. So is there anything you want to talk about first with the San Francisco Giants?
Well, I think we're going to be covering all of the areas in which they're deficient right now, individually, which I think is a good thing. It almost seems like this tumble, because what you're talking about is an 0-5 skid post All-Star break. And really, it feels like what caused this tumble is what Bochy decided to do with the rotation and playing Bumgarner. Well, I guess it wouldn't have mattered, but it just kind of felt like after Cueto blew up in the All-Star game, everything was thrown off. Like, we pitched Bumgarner again in that first game out of the All-Star break on what seemed like fair rest for 4 or 5 days. But it was somewhere between fair rest and inadequate rest. And then he gets shelled. And then Cueto – or no, we played Samardzija next. He always gets shelled, so he got shelled. And then Cueto got shelled again. And it just felt like everybody was working on one day less rest than they should have.
And yeah, I like in,
take on that.
Yeah, like instead, I'm looking up to see the day's rest. Yeah, it looks like coming out of the All-Star break, yeah, it was just 4 days rest, which for Mad Bump. So yeah, and that would have a cascading effect of people just be not getting that All-Star break rest that you saw a lot of other pitchers get, like Jake Arrieta in his first start back. He was back to Jake Arrieta like he was at the beginning of the season, whereas before he was like scuffling pretty bad. But yeah, this skid from the All-Star break has been just been, not only the pitchers have been getting shelled, but the offense, except for the one game against Boston, has just been completely out of sorts. So yeah. I agree. I think that the pitching staff is just, well, it's bad for part of it. It's really good for part of it. The really good part is just sort of out of sorts right now. I think, yeah, the little bit, the lack of rest. And as we're saying this, the Giants are now down 2-0 against the Yankees in the top of the third. So it's been a real scuffle for them. And I don't know, this AL East road trip is just something that's just really hurting them.
It seems like this is coming along just at the right time, though, because it's about 2 weeks to go or a week to go till the trade deadline. And for us to be playing pretty solid AL teams, and especially offensive powerhouses like the AL East, it's really exposing the end of our rotation, which has been a problem all season for the most part.
Yeah, and it's not just the end of the rotation. It's everybody but Cueto and Bumgarner. And that was another thing was, I remember we were talking about Samardzija before. There was a time this season Samardzija was good, and now Samardzija's just back to being bad. And having 3/5 of your rotation be not very good, I think that it's like you said, exactly the right time for a wake-up call for the Giants. Because if say Samardzija had been good and his wheels fell off in a couple weeks, then they may not have realized that they needed to make a move for starting pitching, which they do absolutely need to make
right.
a move for starting pitching. And if they had the best record in baseball, say this 5-game skid had never happened, they may not have realized exactly what they needed and may not have made the moves necessary. And so it's, I don't want to say it's a good thing, but
I'm going to say that.
They may have.
I think it's a really good thing, especially since it's not killing us. I mean, the Dodgers have hit a skid just around the same time. We haven't lost much ground in the NL West, and we still have, I believe we're tied or we're close to having the most wins in baseball still, despite the 5-game losing streak. So for this kind of skid to come at just this time, it's perfect timing. I mean, there's really not a better time this could have happened, because if it happened back in May, people would have forgotten it already and just said, it's just a bump in the road. But I think this creates a sense of panic going forward.
Yeah, a sense of panic. Joe Panic, who's right. also coming back going forward. No, but I didn't want to say it was a good thing, because I feel like that's kind of I hate when people say that, like a reaction to the Tom Brady suspension. People are like, oh, this is a great thing. Now we can see how good Jimmy Garoppolo is. I'm like,
shut
oh,
up. Right.
And I'm like, shut up. I'm like, nothing bad that happens to your team is good. Like, you can find a silver lining, but don't say they're like, oh, this is, you know, people are like, oh yeah, this is fine. I'm like, no, you know, but what it is, I mean, 2014, 2012 and 2010 seasons, the Giants scuffled in June. So it feels like they just sort of postponed that to July, and maybe it did create a sense of urgency for the team. Like they got into it in June before, got out of it in July, and like you said, they forgot about it. And now they're we need to fix this right before the deadline. We need to make moves. But I don't know if it's the starting pitching that gets me as much as it does the relief pitching. Like the starting pitching is bad, but it's, we can get over it.
We've got two guys in the starting rotation that we can really rely on, but yeah, totally different story with the bullpen.
Yeah. And actually before he blew up, what's surprising is Peavy's actually been pitching pretty well lately. He's just had two blowups, but other than that, he's been pitching okay. He's been pitching like a fourth starter, but we got two guys pitching like fifth starters. Matt Cain pitching like the fifth starter of a double A team.
Yeah.
And we need starting pitching, but they need relief pitching more personally, I think, because Javi Lopez is done. He's been the loogie for years and he's toast. He just can't get it done anymore. And Santiago Casilla, wanting him out of the closer role for so long, he cannot handle high leverage situations.
Yeah, that raises an interesting point because, and I don't know if this is just like weird Giants fan mysticism or like whatever this is, but it kind of feels like we've never had a closer that started a two straight championship years. And it just feels like if this is going to be a championship team, Casilla cannot be the closer. Like because he was our closer 2 years ago. And before that, it was Romo. And before that, it was Brian Wilson. But it was never to them back to back, you know? It was always.
Yeah, I get.
So it just, I don't know if like. Yeah, it's just like a weird feeling I get that Casilla should probably be out of the role. That being said, I don't know that there's a better alternative. Or there is better alternatives, but I don't know what that alternative is without trade.
Yeah, I was going to say the best alternative. I mean, preseason I was pounding the table for Hunter Strickland. He's been better than Casilla, but
by no means dominant. And really, his worst moments have come in high leverage situations, like in situations where bases are loaded and he's got to get a couple of quick outs, or he's being brought in to protect a one-run lead and he gives up a home run. He doesn't seem ready for it. And it would take a lot from him to prove to me that he is ready for it. So you mentioned, I mean, we're talking about the pitching struggles. You also talked about Samardzija and how bad he's been, and it's been almost 2 months he's been very bad. I'd be interested to see how Jeff Samardzija's struggles lines up with the loss of Matt Duffy and the loss of Joe Panik, because those two infield pieces have been replaced by guys like Ramiro Pena and Connor Gillespie and Ruben Tejada, none of whom have been very good defensively. So it would be interesting to see, and I don't know for sure that they're a perfect correlation, but it would be interesting to see how those two line up, or whether you even think that that would matter. Because I do know he gives up a lot of runs too.
Homer, a good defense, a good infield defense is what keeps home runs from being 2 and 3 run home runs.
Right.
And also, you know, can turn more double plays. So there's fewer runner opportunities. So I'm taking a look here. Looks like Matt Duffy went on the DL on June 21st and Panic went on the DL. Oh my goodness. Panic's been on the DL for a long time.
Yeah. Cause I dropped him in our fantasy league like months ago.
So let's look at June. Oh my God. So since so June 21st is when Matt Duffy went on the DL. All his starts since then have been 6 innings, 6 runs, 7 innings, 4 runs, 6.1 innings, 2 runs, which is a good outing, and then 5 innings, 4 runs. Before that, he has, you know, he had a few bad starts, but mostly good. It might not be a bad reasoning why. That's a pretty good correlation, Joe. I did not think of that. And
Thank you.
Panic missed some games and went on the DL around the same time. he was off and on around June. So I think you might have hit the nail on the head there. It might have been a subpar infield defense, which is hurting Samardzija's line.
Yeah, and that's another reason to kind of not panic. So, and again, I'm not trying to make panic jokes, but just another reason not to freak out going into the trade deadline about a starter, because some of our starter woes might be fixed, and some of our pitching woes in general might be fixed by just getting some of our best defenders back on the infield.
Yeah.
By the way, mention Hunter Pence, who in right field is a big defensive upgrade.
Yeah, I mean, Pence has been gone for so long. I feel like I'm the only one who remembers poor Hunter. That's another one, because he plays exceptional right field defense, especially out in AT&T Park. He really got that down from playing there, you know, over the last few years. So I said, so Matt Cain.
I heard you. I just tried not to.
I mean, he's completely toast, right? I mean, there's nothing left. I watched his start the other day, and it was horrifying to watch. And he hasn't had a sub 4 ERA since 2012.
Wow.
I mean, he's been hurt in and out of the lineup, but I mean, I know we're paying him $20 million this year, and we're paying him $20 million next year. But it might be time to just, give him a phantom DL and buy him out in the off season.
How much longer is that contract? Did you just say?
I looked it up the other day during the start, which tells you how great the start was going. Right. It's 20 mil this year, next year, and then I believe 2018 option with a $7 million buyout. Let me double check that. That might be 1 year too many, but I know his last year has like a $7.5 million buyout. So he's going to, has a $7.5 million buyout. So we owe him this year and then at least $27.5 million.
Jesus Christ. Yeah. It's a bummer because he had a 4-game stretch where he was really looking like he was coming around. And then even that one June start he made wasn't god awful. I mean, it was pretty not okay. But, I say a 4-game stretch, but then it looks like that May 27th start only went 1.2 innings. But May 10th, May 15th, May 21st, 8 innings, 2 earned runs, 7 strikeouts, no walks. 7 innings, 1 earned run, 2 walks, 5 strikeouts. 6 innings, 1 earned run, 2 walks, 5 strikeouts. That was the best 3-game stretch, undoubtedly, of this season. And he went long enough in those games that it looked like he might be coming back. And then just since then, he hasn't gone over 4 innings.
Yeah, and I think he left that 1.2 innings game. I think he left with elbow discomfort.
Wow.
Which has been his big issue, that he's had all kinds of arm injuries, and he's had the bone chips, and he just really hasn't been the same pitcher since then, which is unfortunate, but it's not unexpected because, I mean, early on in his career, I mean, they called him the horse. I mean, let's look at his pitch. He pitched 190 innings or more from 2006 to 2012.
Wow.
So including he went over 215, it looks like, for 5 of those years. So they rode him as hard as he could. And
this is what we get. People forget that he actually came along before Tim Lincecum. So we've actually had him longer, despite the fact that he is younger. But he's thrown more pitches at the major league level and in his career in general. And like you said, they called him the workhorse, or they called him the horse for a reason. He pitched on teams. He was the first good pitcher post, I would say, Jason Schmidt. And he pitched on a staff with a bunch of guys who were not very good and on a bullpen that was fairly poorly constructed at that point. I believe Benito Santiago was still our Is it wait, not Benito Santiago. Who am I? Armando Benitez was still our closer. Exactly. Yeah. You knew what I was talking about.
Oh my God.
So, I mean, that alone can tell you just kind of the state of our pitching staff at that time. So he was being thrown out there as kind of our crown jewel and throwing 7-8 innings every start if he could.
Yeah, because he had to. Because that was the – I mean, there used to be the thing where it was Lincecum Kane and pray for rain, because if it got to that bullpen – or if we had to get past them in the rotation, it was not looking good. And it was just those were the only two decent starters that we had for a while. And broken now. I mean, the yeah. Giants broke both of them. Lincecum, it could be blamed on his wonky delivery.
And his frame, obviously.
Yeah, and his frame and his hip issue. But, I mean, I saw some statistic where this year his Angels revival is not going well. I think he's averaging like 2 walks or hits per inning. So his whip is above 2.
I'm wow. Like,
yeah, that's not bad.
That's not good at all.
I mean, that's not good. That's bad.
Yeah. It's unfortunate. So. But it, like you said, it could be expected. And we got a good run out of both of them. I mean, it's really hard to hope for 7-8 year stretches like we got from both of those guys, or I maybe closer to 7 year stretches, but
and I mean, if you ask either one of them, they would do it exactly the same. They both got 3 rings out of it.
Absolutely. And so, a couple of Cy Youngs. Did Kane ever get a Cy Young or no?
No, he got let's see,
he never got the wins for it, right?
Well, yeah, he was never as electric as Lincecum was, because Lincecum had all those Ks, you know?
Right.
And Mad Bum was just went out there, or not Mad Bum.
How dare you?
Yeah, I know. Just went out there and was solid. I mean, he was never like going to win the Cy Young, but he was always in the discussion sort of deal.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you. It looks like Matt Cain's done. He had a great run. But yeah, I'd be totally fine with them buying him out. Do you think that he should be transferred to like a relief role, like what we did with Tim Lincecum?
I mean, that's probably what will end up happening, because they're going to have to go get a pitcher at the deadline and either Phantom DL him with elbow discomfort for the rest of the year or move him into the bullpen. Because an innings eater guy like we had before with a six starter sort of guy like Gene Machi or Albert Suarez has been for us this year.
Right, or Chris Heston last year.
Type guy where he just comes in, use Mero Petit, just comes in, eats some innings, goes 3, 4, 5 innings, maybe he'll make a spot starter here or there, but I just
can't keep throwing him out there at this point.
You can't expect to win a World Series trotting Matt Cain out there every fifth day. 2016 Matt Cain, he gave it all. There's nothing left. And it's sad to say, but there's, you know, he gave it all. They got 3 rings out of it. And, you know, now he's done.
Agreed. Yeah. I don't know that there's much more to say about that. I really would rather stop talking about it too.
All right.
I'm getting choked up.
So instead of talking about how Matt Cain sucks, we can talk about how the guy that I was pounding the table to replace Matt Cain in the rotation also sucks.
Okay.
Chris Heston also sucks.
Oh, Chris Heston. I thought we were going to talk about Justin Marge again. But yeah, Chris Heston, definitely.
Yeah.
What's up? So what's up with Chris Heston? I looked at his stats, and he actually looks like he's had a pretty good minor league stint. But then I realized he hasn't pitched a game in July. So what's going on with him?
I think he's actually on the DL right now. Yeah, he's on the 60-day DL right now with an oblique, I'm guessing strain, because that's what always happens to the oblique. But yeah, he's on the disabled list. But, I mean, he only pitched between AAA. Well, he pitched about 76 innings between AAA and the majors, but – he scuffled down the stretch last year.
Yeah.
His one start this year was not good. It says he pitched in 4 games. So,
yeah, but he had one major blow up and then I think a couple of relief appearances maybe.
Yeah. That's what I was going to say. I think that's what it was, is he got chased and then just got stuck in relief and then went on the DL.
Right.
I mean, he was good last year, but I mean, he's 28 and he made his debut in 2014. 26-year-old making his debut at 27. You know, he pitched well. He had the – did he have a no-no or did he have an almost no-no? I forget.
Did he have an almost no-no? I know that Jonathan Sanchez did back in the day, but I don't –
Yeah, he had a no hitter last on June 10th.
Right. Last
year. And so he had flashes of brilliance, but this year it's just I don't know. He didn't have it in him. He got blown up and his starts in AAA. They were decent, but a 3.77 ERA in AAA's, I mean, that's not gonna cut it in the majors.
Right. You know? So part of that, I'm actually looking at his split stats right now. In April, in two games, he had a 2.25, and May is where he really blew up. He had six games where he posted a 4.84, but then in June again, he had five games where he posted a 2.86. So interestingly enough, it doesn't look like he was, it looks like a majority of his starts, he's actually been good in the minors. And anything under a three in the PCL is like, that's going to transfer really well to AT&T Park. So I don't know.
That's true. I did forget that it is the PCL where good pitching goes to die.
Right. yeah. I mean, you got guys like, and that's the thing. I mean, even if Heston is kind of good. And then we've got like Adalberto Mejia is also posting a three something. Like we have guys down there that are posting stats. Or Ty Blatch is another one, or Black, I don't know how to pronounce the name. But all of those guys could be tried out. But when you're looking at three now with Samardzija, struggling spots in the rotation, do you really want to play musical chairs for the next 2 months?
No, you're right.
Yeah. I mean,
you want to
get something.
Yeah, I think the solution to this rotation is not currently on this roster.
Agreed.
I think that's correct. So, I mean, where do they go? We don't have the assets to go out and get a Chris Archer or right. another, you know, top shelf starter that's struggling right now. So,
yeah, we have just a good enough farm system at this point where we can go out and get a guy who's struggling, who's underperforming this year, that could potentially use a change of scenery or a move to a pitcher's ballpark. And there are a few names out there. I don't know. I have three trades in mind that I'm semi interested in. And you tell me which one of these that you would prefer if you could have any of these three trades.
Okay.
The first one is Dellin Patances and CeCe Sabathia. The second one is Junior Guerra and some combination of Will Smith or Jeremy Jeffress. The third one is Matt Shoemaker, and are you ready for it? Are you sitting down?
Oh, God, don't do it, Joe.
Tim Lincecum.
God, not that one. Just
so
take that one.
The third one.
Throw it right out the window.
Okay.
I think actually the Lincecum thing might be bad because I think there might be bad blood between them because he wanted to start, and they said, Tim, you're not very good at starting anymore.
Right. But I think the Angels are pretty almost there too. I mean, if they're not going to move into a relief role, then they're just bombing the season. So,
no, I think they're bombing the season. I think they got three guys that need Tommy John, so they're just sort of calling it on the season.
That's true.
Out of those three, I would want Dellin and CeCe, just because I have a huge man crush on Dellin Betances. I think he's the best reliever in the majors.
Wow, better than Andrew Miller. Because I went with Dellin Patances because I thought he would be cheaper than Andrew Miller. Otherwise, I would have put him there.
Well, the reason that I think Patances is better than Miller is because Miller goes one inning. Patances can go two if you need him, or you know, like 2.1, 2.2, or three even. I think he would start to struggle once he tried to get that third batter out in the third inning. But he can come in and he can be an eighth inning guy. If you need him to be every once in a while, whereas Miller just sort of goes out there and blasts through people in one inning. So while Miller has the better stats, I believe, I think Betances is the better reliever because of his ability to go multi innings. So I would love to have Dellin Betances and CC Sabathia, because I think Sabathia, he had a pretty good stretch for a while there.
He did, up until about a month ago.
Yeah, up until, yeah. So for a while he was good.
You know why he was good, right? I read an article that was talking about how he added a cutter to his arsenal that was somewhat taught to him by, he was being semi-coached by Mariano Rivera, who only used a cutter for the majority of his career. So.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, there's that.
So it's one of those like tangible differences as to why he improved. Okay. Right. Yeah. I mean, I was just going for, you know, solid but unspectacular, just trying to get somebody with a 4 ERA
right.
at AT&T Park. So it's like, but yeah, I love with that little piece of a little nugget in there. I think that's probably the trade that I would want the most. But cool. The question is what would the Yankees want back?
That was going to be the next question for you, actually. but I've got a few names. I mean, you know, there's always the names get brought up, like Christian Arroyo and Phil Bickford and Tyler Beattie. But I actually think the one that doesn't get talked about enough, who I believe was on the top 100, if it wasn't the top 100, he's like the fourth or third highest Giants prospect. He's a AA first baseman. / DH named Chris Shaw. He's kind of like the guy that never gets talked about, and yet he's posted really solid stats in 522 total at-bats in his career, has 29 home runs, and a .342 OBP with a .276 batting average, which isn't bad. .860 OPS.
Oh, that's and I looked him up. It looks like he's 22, so he's got a lot of room to grow.
A lot of growth left, and really not a lot of room on the Giants roster for a first baseman, especially if we're considering moving Buster Posey to first anytime.
Yeah, exactly. I was going to say he is about to get blocked in a hard way because they can't keep putting Belt in the outfield.
Right.
He's just not good at it. Posey's going to end up transitioning to first base as well. So you're right. It's going to get crowded in a hurry. So I think he's a pretty good chip. Looks like, yeah, he's just a big old power hitter. First base.
Now we'd probably have to give up. I mentioned those other three names. Of those three names, because I really think those are the ones that people are going to care about, and anybody else is just going to be filler. Of the name Tyler Beattie, Phil Bickford, and Christian Arroyo, of those three players, which would you be most okay seeing go?
Oh, my God. I would have to, I mean, this is going to be, you know, real cheap, easy analysis, but I would have to say Bickford because he's the furthest away. And I always believe in if you can get value for your prospects that are really far away, you cash in that chip.
Good point.
I mean, I could run into Bickford at the store. His kid's still at, you know, AAA San Jose.
Right. And he's 20, so he's still living on his parents' money probably.
Exactly. I could go. I'm not gonna run into him at Whole Foods, that's for sure, at a AAA or an A ball salary. But it would have to be Bickford out of those three, just because he's the furthest away. It looks like Arroyo's with the Flying Squirrels, and so is Beattie. So they're closer. But if I had to pick one of those three, I would say Bickford. But at the same time, I would not want to pay two of our top five prospects, especially if one of them is a pitcher, to get Betances.
That seems to be the other thing that's argued is, should we give up any of these guys for a relief pitcher? Like, and I think that's actually a really interesting conversation because we're entering a trade season where it seems like everyone's bullpen is in disarray. Every competing team needs bullpen arms, which is driving up the price of Miller. It's driving up the price of Chapman. It's driving up the price of Betances to a certain degree. And this seems like it's the first year that anyone's ever been going gaga over relief pitchers. So have we reached that point where top blue chip trade prospects are that it's okay to give those guys up for a reliever?
I think for a guy like Betances, it potentially could be, because he's still ARB controlled. So you're not trading it for 1 year of Dellin Betances. You're not trading it for like 50 odd innings of Dellin Betances, where if you were to make the same trade for, say, who's a reliever under contract, if you're to do it for Chapman,
right?
Chapman, you'd be paying top dollar for it, whereas Betances, you still have team control.
Right, so you get a little more salary flexibility.
And not only salary flexibility, but that guy's not going anywhere. It's not a rental.
Right.
This isn't a Zach Wheeler for Carlos Beltran situation where as soon as free agency started, there was a Beltran-sized hole
right.
in the door. So I think actually, if it is for Betances, I actually, now that I'm thinking it through, I actually probably would.
You would trade.
Probably would give up Fedor Beatty and Kershaw to get Betances, just because of that control. Bickford and Beatty are hope. Betances is the truth. He's there. You know, he's shown that he can be a major league contributor, and he'll be on the team for the next 4 years.
Right.
And while in theory Bickford or Beatty would be on the roster by the time those 4 years are over, that's not a guarantee.
I think we've traded enough as Giants fans. We've traded enough arms to know that most of them don't pan out. Like, maybe the most successful arm we've traded was, you could say Joe Nathan, but he was a reliever. Of the starters was Zach Wheeler, who had a decent year last year and is still working to try to put a full season under his belt. But the rest of them have been pretty.
Francisco Liriano.
Francisco Liriano. Yeah, that was.
Yeah, he was part of that Joe Nathan trade. That's probably the most stinging that we traded, but that's only because we got
or more.
Yeah, and it's more because it was for AJ freaking Przinski,
right?
You know,
yeah.
Like, we traded and Boof Bonser. That's like the greatest name in baseball,
right? Which during that era of trades was not by any means one of the worst Giants trades. It was actually a pretty okay Giants trade.
Yeah, that's true. That was kind of a disaster area. So
yeah.
So all right. I think we've put pitching to bed. I think we both agree that we want to see them make a trade for an arm, and I would personally love that Yankees trade that you pointed out.
The other cool thing about that one, and the reason I threw CeCe Sabathia's name in there, is because he's getting paid $25 million this year and $25 million next year, which is not necessarily something the Yankees can't afford. But if they're looking to blow it up and rebuild a roster and get youth infusion, they don't want to pay a CeCe Sabathia, who's posting a 4 ERA, $25 million next year.
No, they don't. And he's playing in a bandbox. So it's not ideal for him to be, and he's playing in a division of bandboxes. So it's not ideal for him to be in the AL East. That $25 million would be better spent in the NL West.
Right. And he has a no trade clause, and he's from the Bay Area. So if there was ever a team that he would waive that for, it's his childhood team.
All right. So I'll get the Yankees on the phone. I'll get Cashman on the phone. We'll make it work. We'll make it happen.
Let's make it work. Yeah. All right. So you wanted to talk about
Hitting. We kind of how everybody's been injured and dead. Panic Pence, yeah. Duffy, all this extended time. Span and Pagan have been like various stages of in and out.
Span, so let's start from the bottom. I mean, you put them as like the fourth one. I would love to talk about Denard Span, because his fall off is terrifying to me. Like, he went from a 300 hitter last year to a 250 hitter this year out of seemingly nowhere. And it's not just that. He's getting caught stealing about one every three times he attempts, maybe even a little more than that. He's got 4 home runs, although you couldn't expect him to have that much power at AT&T. He was never much of a power hitter anyway. But the drop-off in steals, the drop-off in OBP, the drop-off in slugging in general, the drop-off in batting average, all those things, and the fact that he's 32, which is about the age that Angel Pagan started to go downhill. Like it just rings so true of that Angel Pagan contract, that 4-year 30 whatever we gave him, or 50, or I don't remember that, but whatever, that 4-year contract, he was good for about 1 or 2 years and then he was crap after that.
And Span has been, I mean, do you think he's lost, I'm looking here, he lost over 100 points of OPS over what he did in 2014 and 2015. Right. I mean, do you think maybe he's hiding an injury?
Could be, yeah.
Could possibly be. So let me do some.
You know, it could just be old age is the other thing. I after witnessing guys like, especially speed-based players, it seems like 32 is the wall where everything goes downhill from there, that they have to start adjusting their game. Like even guys like Jose Reyes, Andres Torres, you know, from in the past, it like once they hit 32, their skills just diminish so much. Hmm. Michael Bourne, you know?
Yeah. Michael Bourne is like the poster child for that. Cause he fell off a freaking cliff. So, I did a quick, just a quick splits here. So, but yeah. At the end of May, he was, Denard Span was hitting about 275. Hold on, let me get this split back. At the end of May for the season, he was hitting a slash line of 274 with a 363 OBP and a lovely 376 slugging. So a 740 OPS, just a 738, just a little off his career to be expected, like you said, old age. But since that time, he's hit 227 with a 228 OBP and a 298 slugging for a OPS. So, I think he might be hiding an injury. I think he's been banged up. He's been in and out of the lineup. I think it's bothering him more than he's letting on, and it's definitely affecting his play because there's a steep drop off there, sort of at the end of starting at the end of May through the last month and a half. So,
interesting.
The Span thing might be injury based, that he's kind of hiding it, because I think he missed extended time last year.
Exactly. Yeah. He only had 246 at bat, or 275 plate appearances last year. So about a half season, maybe even less. So yeah, I mean, it could be an injury carried over from last season. It could be an injury that just he got right for the beginning of this season and then got to right around where the injury kicked in last season. And now he's bad again. He's probably been used more than any other Giants position player this year. If you think about it, he's played almost every game.
It
just stinks to have him at the top of the lineup batting, like you said, 227 or something. That's ridiculous.
This month and a half, yeah, he's been sub 250. I'm wondering if maybe it's because everybody has been hurt and he's pressing.
Like, could be.
He's saying, you know, he can't not be in the lineup because, you know, we only have so many outfielders to go around. Do you really want to start Jarrett Parker, Mac Williamson, and Gregor Blanco? Like,
right.
So it might be the thing where when Hunter Pence comes back, maybe he starts to be like, all right, hey, he goes to Bochy. He's like, hey, Skip, I'm going to need some more time off because this is killing me.
So, well, it's probably not a bad idea. With the current state of the team, to just have him do a straight platoon with Pagan, and then have mix in Jarrett Parker and Mac Williamson every now and then. Maybe not a straight split platoon, but some sort of just combination of those four guys as is. But it also raises the other concern, which is, do we need another reliable outfielder that can play a full season?
I don't think so. I mean, Parker and Williamson have been all right as fill-ins. I think once Pence comes back and we can spell span more, maybe give him, maybe throw him on the DL for a couple of weeks once Pence gets back so that he can have some time to rest and recover from whatever's bugging him. Old age or whatever. And then I think we're okay with the outfield if they can stay healthy. And if they can't, we've seen that Williamson and Parker, they hold their own. I mean, I think if the pitching, if Samardzija was what I'd hoped he would have been, and the bullpen wasn't garbage, I think an outfielder would be a good call. But with team, I just don't think we have enough assets to go out and get a guy in trade, unless it's one of those, you know, the waiver trades that go through in August, where you basically go, hey, so what do you want for him? Do you want this bag of baseballs, or do you want four, you know, left-handed catcher mitts? And it's pretty much nothing. But I don't think they have the capital to go after a pitcher and an outfielder is the problem.
Well, I actually think that the recent success of both Adam Duvall and Tommy Joseph, although Tommy Joseph never played at the major league level, but certainly Adam Duvall, kind of it's something that can be used in trade talks for maybe trading Mac Williamson or Jarrett Parker. In some sort of package to get either one of those relievers or starters or even just a reliable outfielder back, because they're hitting for power at AT&T, which not a lot of players do. And if you look at the leap that Duvall made, where now he's, you know, he's an all-star, he's in the home run derby, maybe you can make that similar case for Mac Williamson and Jarrett Parker.
So what you're saying is Jarrett Parker and Christian Arroyo for Ryan Braun. That's what you're saying.
Something like that. I was actually going to talk about Ryan Braun a little when we were talking about fantasy trades or fantasy trade scenarios. But the other, I actually think what would do us a whole lot more good than a guy like Ryan Braun or Carlos Beltran is somebody who can play a great defensive center field. Because while Denard Span and Angel Pagan can both get to the balls they need to get to, they still have enough speed to be able to patrol the outfield. They don't have the arms. I mean, if you've ever watched Span throw in, sometimes he won't even try to throw a guy out from who's scoring from second. It's incredible to me how weak his arm is.
I still remember, like, it was one of the first three or four games of the season. I was just half watching a game. You texted me, and the gist of it was, like, I can't remember exactly what you said, but you basically said Denard Span's arm is disgusting and he has no right playing center field. And I was like, oh my God. I was like, what happened? Because I was just half watching the game. I thought he like booted, like he like threw short of the cutoff man or something. And it was just sort of just like a late, I went back and watched it and I was like, I can see what you're saying. But I was like, oh my God, that text message.
It's a weak arm. Yeah. And some of it could be bias left over from that game, but I've watched a lot of games, and maybe it's just because Pagan and Blanco have been so good in center field prior to the last year or so, that their arms have been so good and we've been so good at throwing guys out and keeping guys from picking up that extra base, that watching a guy like Span, it just hurts. And you know it's not going to get better now that he's 32 and he's entering his mid-30s. Like, I just don't see this guy as being the center fielder for the next 3 years, even if his average picks up.
I think he'll probably go the Pagan route. And he gets shifted over to left field quietly one year, and then he becomes a bench bat. That's what I'm saying is going to happen to Pagan next year.
Right.
And then lets his contract expire and he retires. I think that's what will happen with Span. He may be I think he'll probably be our left fielder next year. Hopefully we go out and get another decent center fielder. So
yeah, I hope so. How's Gary Brown doing these days?
I don't know. That guy's probably bagging groceries.
Hey, you should go down. Yeah, in San Jose probably, huh?
Yeah, because he couldn't get a bus ticket out. Let's see what Gary Brown, good old Gary Brown, is up to, who I remember saying the Giants should never trade Gary Brown. He's the future of the franchise. He plays for the Southern Maryland Blue Crabs of the Atlantic League of Professional Baseball, which I'm guessing is an indie ball league. Yes, it's an indie ball league.
Wow.
So, yeah.
I see.
So maybe we should have traded him for Carlos Beltran.
That would have been instead. Nice. Yeah.
Yeah, that is Zach Wheeler. And then everything would have been fixed. So.
All right, so let's move on to Matt Duffy and Joe Panik, because as I said, both of those guys, I mean, you're talking about the 2 and 3 hole hitters at the beginning to start the season. And both of those guys are incredibly strong defensively. So how important is it for us to get those two guys back? Like on a scale from 1 to 10?
You mean you don't like the Ramiro Pena experience?
I actually liked it. Remember I said, I want to say 7 games in, that guy's going to fall off a cliff. And his bat's actually stuck around, but the defense, God, the infield defense has been atrocious.
Yeah, it's been so bad. I mean, Connor Gillespie already flamed out of the Giants system. I mean, the Giants already kicked him to the curb, and then he came back. And then Pena is just the defense, like you said, it's just been horrendous. They're not making the same plays that Duffy and Panik make. And you can kind of tell too with Crawford that he's between these two Jamokes who don't know what they're doing, and it's not as smooth as when Duffy and Panik are out there.
So right. Yeah, it actually makes Crawford worse, which is it's hard to do.
Yeah, that guy should be foolproof, but I mean, it's there's only so he can't run. He can't cover the entire everything from Brandon Belt to the left field foul line. You know, he can't cover all of that.
Yeah. I actually looked up before this podcast where those two positions have ranked over the course of the last 2 months, which is about the time that those guys have been up and we've been shifting them around the infield. Second base wasn't so bad. I think they were 18th over those 2 months. Which is lower half, but not atrocious. The San Francisco Giants at third base over the last 2 months have been 26th, I believe. 25th or 26th, which is just a nightmare.
Oh my God.
It's been, I mean, that's like, there's no other competitive team that comes close to that.
My God, that's so bad.
Yeah, Connor Gillespie, while he, you know, adds the additional, or the occasional home run or like the occasional clutch hit has not been all that great offensively. So it's just, I look at Matt Duffy and I never thought of him as being this crucial piece. He always kind of seemed like the maybe the eighth or ninth best player on the team or most important player on the team. And I always thought it was weird that he batted third for us for the last 2 years. But man, seeing what's happened to the defense, seeing what's happened to the middle of the lineup, and I love Brandon Belt, and we'll get to him later, but we really need a healthy Matt Duffy back more than anything. More than a trade, I think.
Oh, sorry, I lost you there for a second. What was that?
I actually think we need a healthy Matt Duffy back more than a trade.
Really? Yeah, well, yeah. I don't think trading for infield would be the right move. I think we have the right players in place. You can't get upset about Connor Gillespie and Ramiro Pena with their, you know, how bad they are when they're not supposed to be the starters. You know, they're supposed to come in utility men or what have you. So they're doing okay, I guess, for their expectations, but they're still not doing well. And that's the problem, is the Giants have been out 2 very key cogs. So I think once they get those back, that defense will get shored up and they'll be okay. But it's just very fortuitous that they started to struggle at this time, like we said, so that they could make that trade that they desperately need, because they were doing a lot of smoke and mirror stuff. And I didn't want the Giants to think that that would probably be the worst thing that could have happened.
So you and I agree that of the successful Giants teams of the recent past, this is one of the most flawed, if not the most flawed.
Yeah, it's pretty flawed.
It's pretty bad.
When you talk about how the rotation and the bullpen are disasters, and about how the center fielder, you know, is not very good, and everybody else is hurt except for Brandon Belt. It's got a lot of holes. It's got a lot of problems. It's definitely not cruising to the title. And I said it all along that the huge winning streak that they knocked out, it was mostly smoke and mirrors. Parker
right.
and Lynn have been doing well, but they shouldn't be doing this well. And yeah, that's just where I stand on the situation.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. So speaking of Brandon Belt,
yeah,
I think it's time we give him his due, which is unfortunate because he's what, in the middle of an 0 for 20 or 1 for 20 slump. But
oh yeah, he's been terrible lately. But
even with that, he has the third highest OPS of first baseman in the majors. How crazy is that?
Yeah, and that's tough, especially considering the season that not Paul Goldschmidt, but Anthony Rizzo is having. Who's number two ahead of him?
Well, you just named one and two.
Oh, it was Goldie? Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. So yeah, Brandon Belt has been incredible this year. I always kind of liked Brandon Belt. You have always loved Brandon Belt, but I have fully gone over to loving Brandon Belt.
Good.
I always loved his defense. It's really frustrating watching him bat because he is physically incapable of laying off a ball that's inside. But luckily, he always gets wood on it and fouls it off. But right up until the skid, he had the mystical, magical 300, 400, 500 slash line.
Right.
He was one of, I believe, when I ran it, he was one of seven guys in baseball that had that. It was like him, Big Poppy, Matt Carpenter somehow, Rizzo. just a handful of really good hitters, and he was right up there with them. And so I was really impressed. It's he's hit for power before, and he's hit for average before, but he's never been able to really put them together. And right up until the skid, he was really doing that. It was impressive. Wish he could lay off the inside ball, but he gets wood on it, so he's always fouling them off. They're not blowing past him, is what it is. So
those used to be horrendous strikeouts. Those fastballs on the inside.
Yeah, and now he's coming around on him, and his eye has gone to another level. He's always had a decent eye,
right.
But his strike zone this year has just impressed me. It's gotten to the point where I watch the Giants games to watch Brandon Belt at bats, just because they're so impressive to me now. Like his plate discipline and his power and his ability to fend off pitches, because. In all honesty, he would have a higher OBP if he could just lay off those balls, but at least he's making contact with them now.
Yeah.
So he's staying alive. He's not whiffing through them like he was in the past.
Yeah. So. I mean, he really is the kind of guy that AT&T suppresses his stats so much. I mean, he's got the eye and the patience and the strike zone and the ability to foul off pitches. He almost looks like Joey Votto to me. Like, if he was playing in Cincinnati, he would be Joey Votto.
Oh, wow. I don't know about that, Joe. Joey Votto might have the greatest hitting eye of all time. So,
okay, but he'd be pretty close to Joey Votto. Right?
He'd be pretty good. He's definitely like a poor man's Joey Votto. I will give you that.
There you go.
Yeah, good contact, good vision, good enough power. I agree with the suppressing of his OBP. If he played in a smaller, less, or, you know, in a band box, he would, you know, he would be one of those 25 to 30 home run guys annually, I think. But for AT&T Park, I mean, he's a good hitter. He's got, you know, he's getting doubles power. And so I'm very happy with Brandon Belt. There was a time where everybody turned against him because he wasn't one of those big mashing, big poppy first basemen. But
by the way, that's never coming back. I don't know why people are assuming that we're just going to have another 30 home run hitter like that. The closest thing we have to that is Hunter Pence, and he was on track for it this year until he got injured. But it's so rare to have a 30 home run hitter at AT&T. Bonds might be one of the only ones.
No, I mean, I think the when AT&T Park first opened, I think Giants fans got spoiled because we had Bonds. There was Kent.
Right.
There's Andres Galarraga, but you're talking
Rich
about
Uribe had that big season.
big season. But you're talking about with Galarraga, Kent, and Bonds, three of the better power hitters of that era.
Yeah.
You know, and at least two of those guys are going into the Hall of Fame. So it's like the people got spoiled by that. And so that's right. The world that sort of Brandon Belt entered. But you know what? When the Giants had success before, they didn't have that first baseman. They had JT Snow.
Right.
I mean, in the late 90s, it was the same sort of for a long time. Belt was glove first, just like JT Snow. Right. Then there's some power and all that. And so I'm with you. I don't know why people for so long were pounding the table because Belt wasn't that type of hitter. There are many different ways to be a good hitter, and Belt is the Joey Votto mold. So,
yeah. And I totally agree. And it bugs me when we get around trade season, especially to hear Giants fans come out and they're like, oh, we need a power hitter. Oh, we need a power hitter. Well, when you got guys, pitchers that are coming here from other teams and their ERA drops a run, mm-hmm. you have to expect that when we go out and trade for a power hitter, he's going to lose 5 to 10 home runs easily.
Yeah, that's just how it goes.
So really happy that this season came along for Brandon Belt, that people are finally even starting to talk. Like, you hear some of the analysts talk about Brandon Belt's season, and they just go gaga over it, despite the fact he only has 10 home runs. Because even just a few years ago, that would have been the stat that stands out the most. Oh, well, he's having an okay season, but where's the power?
Yeah, exactly.
So really glad that the analysts have come around, really glad that some of the fans have come around on a guy like Brandon Belt, and that really glad that he's having this season in the first year of a a 6-year contract.
Oh yeah, that's right. They locked him up. So yeah, it's really great that Belt is having this breakout. So I did a quick lookup of players not named Barry Bonds or Jeff Kent since 2000. The Giants have had 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 hitters hit 25 or more home runs. So
25. You're
exactly, yeah, 25, not even 30. If you bump that number up to 30, it is
one.
Yeah, it's Rich Aurelia,
right?
Yeah, exactly. Yes. Yes, it's Rich Aurelia. The other guys are Ray Durham, Panda, and Aubrey Huff. Those all had, they had over 25 home runs.
Well, what about Hunter Pence? Didn't he have 27?
And Hunter Pence, sorry, yeah. I missed that. He's in there too. He got squished between Bonds and Kent when I did it alphabetically, so I looked right past him.
Gotcha.
So yeah, so Hunter Pence, he's the closest that the Giants have, but that's not really his game. He's not a power hitter. He has power.
Right.
So the Giants have smartly moved away from trying to hoard that type of hitter.
Yeah. Brandon Belt, by the way, leads the National League or leads the Major League first baseman in doubles. So that, I mean, that says all you need to know. He's hitting doubles in a smaller park that'd be home runs.
Yep. That's precisely that. So in conclusion, we love Brandon Belt.
Yes. And we'll talk about so much more in the near future.
Oh yeah. We'll have weekly Belt Watch. Joe, we have talked a lot about how we have had pitchers and hitters that have gotten called up from the minors. There's a lot of guys shuffling in and out of the team. Mm-hmm. And a lot of just sort of fringy MLB players have made their way through the Giants lineup this year. So So I have a trivia question for you. I'm going to see if you can do this.
Okay.
So there have been 15 hitters this year, or 15 players, I'm sorry, who have registered a plate appearance with both the Giants and the Rivercats.
Wow.
Yeah. Actually, I'm going to strike that. There are only 14. Chris Heston did not register an at-bat with the Rivercats, so he's gone.
Okay.
So there are 14, okay?
Okay.
I'll give you a hint. 4 of them are pitchers, okay? I'm not going to expect you to name the pitchers. So of the remaining 10 hitters, can you name the hitters who have registered a at-bat with both the Sacramento affiliate and the San Francisco Giants?
Do you want me to do them in alphabetical order, or can I just do them, rattle them off?
You can make sure they're slow enough so that I can mark them off. But yeah, you can just guess them out.
Okay. Ramiro Pena.
Correct.
Connor Gillespie.
Correct.
Mac Williamson.
Correct.
Jarrett Parker.
Correct.
Hunter Pence.
Correct. He had exactly one plate appearance, or he had two plate appearances, one at bat.
Cool. Joe Panik.
Correct.
Looks like I got four left.
Yeah, four left.
This is where it gets tough.
Mm-hmm.
Oof, I don't know if I can go any further than that. That's a lot.
Okay. Do you want me to start giving you hints?
Yeah.
One of the guys, his first, it sounds like it's the name of a cheese.
That was a hint.
That is a hint.
Shoot. Cheese.
Yeah.
Munster? We don't have a guy named Munster.
We do not have a guy named Munster, but we do have a guy. Do you want me to give you this one?
Yeah.
Kelby. Kelby Tomlinson. Sounds like Colby.
Oh, I didn't even know that was a cheese.
Oh, you didn't know Colby Jack. Yeah.
Oh, well, that's brutal. Shoot, okay, Kelby Tomlinson. I should have gotten that one. All right. Give me the hint for the next guy.
Next guy. He shares a name with a former Giants shortstop and third baseman who was old and terrible when he played with the Giants.
Oh, Ruben Tejada.
Yeah, there you go.
I should have gotten that one too.
This guy has played with the Giants for a while, and he is currently old and terrible.
Ooh.
Oh. And we talked about him earlier, and it's not Denard Span.
Old and terrible.
I don't know if terrible is the right word. Old and broken.
Old and broken. Was Angel Pagan in the minors?
Ding, Angel Pagan.
Wow, I didn't even know that. That's incredible. Yeah,
it looks like he played three games there. And then the last guy, this guy, I did not, when I saw his name on the Giants broadcast, I went, who is this guy?
Oh my.
I had no idea who he was, to be completely honest with you. He is a utility fielder and outfielder, and his last name is a color.
A color? Is it a main color or?
Yes. Yeah. It's not like James Violet. No, it's not
or
like that.
Salmon. It's not.
Yeah. Like no, it's not salmon. Like salmon or chartreuse.
Grandson. Well, a color. Oof. This should be easy.
Actually, okay. This will just give it away.
Black?
No, I'll give it. This will give it away. If you change one letter in your last name, it's his last name.
Oh, Grant Green.
Grant Green.
Can we talk about Grant Green? He's been pretty good.
He's been all right, but I had no idea who he was when he first started playing for the Giants. So, like, I literally had no idea who he was.
So he was actually a pretty highly touted, I want to say, Angels prospect, because he was a first round pick, or he was a top prospect. About four, let's say like 5 or 6 years ago, because I was researching him for fantasy, and I followed him for like, a month and a half straight when he was on another team. So when I found out the Giants got him, it kind of perked my ears up, and then I was like, oh, he's been terrible for X amount of years. But then he came up to the majors this year. He's been pretty good.
Yeah, he has been. He's been impressive this year. I didn't expect it because I had no idea who he was, and I have a bias against Angels prospects because remember when they had all the best prospects in baseball and then they all turned out to be terrible, like Dallas McPherson,
oh,
those
yeah.
guys. So I automatically assume that Angels prospects are going to be terrible because they talked about how great they were and none of them panned out.
Right. But I want to say that he was, and again, I don't want to spend too much time talking about Grant Green, but I want to say that he was drafted by the A's, actually, and then traded to Anaheim, like, that year, which says all you need to know about Grant Green. Like, if he was any kind of prospect, he would have made it to the A's major league roster, but he was traded, like, the first year they had him.
Yeah, so... Yeah, because Billy Beane's not all about trading money controlled guys. So if he trades you a prospect, it's a guy that he's not really down for. So yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, first rounder. Looks like he was a 13th overall pick in the 2009 draft.
Jesus.
Yeah.
Wow. So he may have something in him.
Maybe he could be a diamond in the rough.
Yeah, maybe he's the this year's player that comes out of nowhere to lift the Giants to a title.
Yeah, we gotta have one every year, right?
Yeah, that's true. Oh my God, he was drafted before AJ Pollock. He was drafted before Mike Trout.
No.
He was 12 picks before Mike Trout.
Oh my.
He was before Randall Grichuk. He was before Shelby Miller, Brad Boxberger, James Paxton. Oh my God.
I don't like looking at that draft because every time I look at it, I see where the Giants could have gotten him, and it bugs me.
Oh my God, yeah. Yeah, Wheeler. Oh my God.
We drafted Wheeler. That was the Wheeler draft?
Yeah, that was the Wheeler draft. Joe, we could have had Mike Trout.
Instead of Carlos Beltran.
Mike Trout. Mike Trout drinks Sprite, Joe. Actually, his obsession with meteorology, Mike Trout.
I didn't know that. I thought I knew everything about Mike Trout.
Yeah. Oh, he's like obsessed with meteorology. Like if you go on his Twitter page, like it's all about like checking out like these cool like meteorological apps and all this weather stuff and how he wants, if he didn't play meteorologist and all this crazy nonsense about the best player in baseball.
Wow.
It's pretty incredible. Also, he is one of those guys that does the last word in a sentence and then a space and then the exclamation point. He's one of those guys.
Oh. So,
yeah.
So he's just dominating at this point the Bryce Harper, Mike Trout wars because he's an interesting person as well.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. Bryce Harper did his best with his like make baseball fun again, and then Bryce Harper became terrible. So Mike Trout is definitely winning that race right now.
Yeah. Mike Trout's like, check this out. I'm a nerd too.
He's like, check this out. This measures the dew point. This measures the So yeah. I think we've done a pretty good job putting the Giants to bed.
Yeah. Are we going to talk about the Dodgers at all and the horribleness that befell them recently?
They can suck it. I'm actually pretty upset about the Clayton Kershaw thing, not as a Giants fan, but as a baseball fan. Because
yeah.
It was like the early 2000s Pedro dominant. Like he was having one of those type of seasons and we're getting robbed of it. It could be over.
I would take it even further. I'd say he was having like an early 1900s. Type dominance, like,
oh my God. A dead ball.
Yeah.
Era.
Yeah. Exactly.
I mean, what he was doing was incredible. He had Phil Hughesian levels of strikeout to walk. I mean, Phil Hughes, the greatest pitcher ever, the current record holder of the strikeout to walk rate. Do you know that?
I did know that for the single season, right? It's like something like 17 or something.
That's insane. But yeah, I'm pretty upset about Clayton Kershaw. I'm not upset about Hyunjin Ryu getting hurt again, Alex Wood getting hurt again. Not upset about Julio Urias being a bust. Well, semi-bust.
Adrian Gonzalez, I'm not terrible.
Yeah, I'm Yasiel Puig getting hurt again.
Right.
Don't get me wrong. I'm not upset about any of that.
Right.
Pretty upset about Clayton Kershaw though, because as a baseball fan, I feel like we're missing out on something that.
And how cool is it that we get to root against two Thompson brothers?
That is. Pretty nice. That is pretty nice.
That's
people were losing their minds when the Dodgers came to the Bay Area and Clay Thompson was there in a Dodgers hat.
Outstanding.
They were like, who does he think he is? This is the Bay Area. There's one team. I'm like, first of all, there's like six teams in the Bay Area.
Right.
So the Giants aren't even the team that he doesn't play in their city. Like,
right.
There's no relationship. Who does Clay Thompson think he is? Like, doesn't he know what city he's in? Like, just calm down, guys.
Just relax, please. He's his brother. Yeah. He's rooting for his brother, and he's a Dodger fan, so who cares?
Yeah, is that okay if he roots for his brother to do well? I mean, is that okay for you Warriors fans?
Fuck the Warriors too. They can suck it.
They can. That's something they can definitely do. That's another thing we didn't talk about was this Kevin Durant thing. Oh my God.
That's Kevin Durant. Like a whole podcast of just anger, I feel like.
Oh, maybe that's what we'll do next week. Next week we'll talk about this whole Kevin Durant thing because I got a lot to say.
Okay. I wouldn't mind hearing it, actually. I think that's a good idea.
All right. So I think you think we're good for this week, Joe? I think we'll skip talking about all the running back stuff that happened today, especially with the Zeke Elliott thing seems to be developing. Don't want to speak out of turn there.
Oh, my.
Yeah, so he was accused of domestic violence, and apparently there's all this evidence that she said that she was going to accuse him of domestic violence if he broke up with her.
Oh.
And then he broke up with her. So
Yikes. Yeah. There's
a lot developing there, and I don't want to speak out of turn on something like that. So maybe we'll give it a week to develop.
How about that?
Give it a week to develop. And next week we'll talk about Zeke Elliott. We'll talk about a little Lev Bell.
A
little bit of KD and the Warriors, cool. Where we'll just sit here and just rant about KD and the Warriors.
Awesome. And we have neither of those two guys on our fantasy football team. So we can just go.
Well, actually, thing about Zeke Elliott, where it basically was like, if you're drafting Ezekiel Elliott in the first round, you are the dumbest person on earth. That's what it boiled down to. So, because he's a first-round pick. He's a rookie. Joe, we have as many NFL snaps as Zeke Elliott does. So,
this is true. Although I have this sinking feeling that we're not as good as him.
Well, you're not. Not with that attitude, Joe.
It's true.
Anything else you want to say? I think it's time we get this bad boy wrapped up.
Giants scare me, and yet I'm very happy to watch them.
I am in the exact same boat. I'm very happy to have them in my life. I'm very happy they are in the run for playoff contention, but right now they are hot.
I want to leave them for a better woman, but there's none out there. I got to stick with these guys.
Exactly. Who else are you going to go with?
No one else would have me, please.
The River Cats? Because guess what, Joe Berg? That's just Giants life.
Right.
You're stuck. So, all right. Well, I just want to say thanks for listening, guys. We'll be more frequent. And I'm going to try to actually get this up on, see if I can get this posted on Inscriber, maybe get us a little bit more listeners. So we'll see you next Thursday. I'll probably actually get these posted on Friday. This one will probably go up tomorrow on Saturday. But Joe, it's been good talking with you. It's
been a pleasure.
And see us next week. Thanks for listening, guys.
Round the outside. Round the outside.
Guess who's back? Back again. Shady's back.